gathered together from the far reaches of the internet, are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
The Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast,
The New 52 Adventures of Superman,
Superman Forever Radio,
I've Got a Few Things to Say About Superman,
The Kara Zor-El Podcast,
The Superman Vidcast,
The World's Best Podcast,
and
Radio Kale from SupermanHomepage.com.
Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weeder,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Danny Sapp,
Cayman Stoll,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V.
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
This is the Superman Fan Podcast. I'm your host, Billy Hogan. Put on your indestructible cape and join me as together we'll crash through the time barrier and fly into the past to explore the Silver Age adventures of Superman. Welcome to episode number 263, part 4. The Dean Cain panel for the week of Wednesday, March 20th, 2013. And I'm recording this episode in the middle of the afternoon of Thursday, March 21st. The Dean Cain panel was the second one I attended on Saturday, March 16th at MegaCon. It was in one of the larger halls. You know, when you see the room number and it has four letters after it, yeah, that's a big hall because they're made where they can separate them if they need to. But, no, they needed the whole thing. It was supposed to start about 12:20, but I'm not sure exactly the time because I wasn't watching the time on my cell phone a lot. It was about 15, 20 minutes late, but there was a very long line. There are two lines. One was for the voice actors who were some of the media guests at MegaCon, and then another line was for the Dean Cain panel. So the voice actors panel, the line for that was against the wall along where some panel rooms were, and then we were kind of away from the wall, so we got a lot of, okay, which line is this? And some people were more interested in the voice actors panel. It was a packed hall, pretty much, and I was really glad I went. I've never seen Dean Cain close up. Well, I didn't see him, talk to him personally, but he's the first actor who's portrayed Superman that I've watched live. He was a very, very down-to-earth person. He really connected well with the audience. He had a great sense of humor. So if you're anywhere and he's making a public appearance and you have the chance to go, I would recommend you don't pass it up. I'm sure a lot of the questions he gets, a lot of the same ones all the time, but he doesn't sound like he's tired of answering them. He really goes out of his way to connect with the audience. So I hope you enjoyed this panel as much as I did, and we'll get right to it after a few promos for some comic book podcasts.
In the decade of the 1970s and 80s, not even the great city of Metropolis could be spared the ravages of an energy crisis, supercriminal attacks, or disco. The job of protecting the city fell to Superman, whose battle for truth, justice, and the American way made him a symbol of hope for the city of Metropolis. Charlie Niemeyer, in association with the Superman Podcast Network, presents Superman in the Bronze Age. Superman of the Bronze Age is a bi-weekly podcast highlighting the Bronze Age adventures of the Man of Steel in various comic titles. Follow along at www.supermanandthebronzeage.com.
Ready to form Voltron!
Job for Superman.
Power Rangers!
Right away, Michael.
Autobots, transform!
By the power of Grayskull!
For the honor of Grayskull!
Hello. I'm the Doctor.
Charlie's Geekcast, coming January 1st, 2013, to www.charliesgeekcast.com.
A lot of you remember back in the Superman days. So without any further ado, we are going to bring to you our next MegaCon 2013 guest, the wonderful, handsome, Mr. Dean!
I'm on West Coast time still, so this morning came kind of early to me. How's everybody doing? A lot of things out there. Mark, you want to go ahead and start things? What do you want to do?
Yeah, hold on.
We'll do this. What we're going to do, we're going to find out exactly what you've been up to so far, if there's anything new that's happening. That way we load the audience with questions ready for you, and then I will be choosing people randomly from the audience to ask specific questions. So give us a follow-up. Where you been? What you been doing? How come you still look so damn good?
All right, I'll take that. Well, I'm currently shooting a show that was called Bounce, but now they've changed it to Hit the Floor. It's for VH1. It's a one-hour drama. It's a professional basketball coach, and I'm in, right in the middle of shooting that show right now, and it goes through April. We do 10 episodes on VH1. It's a lot of fun. It's about there's a lot of girls dancing in it, so it's terrible for me to have to be there all day. But it's a great show, and then I have a couple pictures lined up behind that to shoot, and then possibly another series. So it's a very busy but very productive year. No complaints with me.
Fantastic. We're just happy to have you here. Obviously, have you been to Central Florida before, just out of curiosity?
I have been to Central Florida a number of times.
Have you? So you've done all the theme parks and all the rides. Okay, now that we got all of that on your system, now we can concentrate on you. Do we have any questions out in the audience? Right here in red hat. Your hand went up really quick.
Hello. So I've been a fan of Superman for a really long time. It's kind of obvious. So how much from my... Not to insult to you, but Christopher Reeve is just, to me, is just like, wow. How much of his Superman did you study or research before you came up with your own Superman character?
Well, I thought when I grew up, Christopher Reeve was my Superman, and he still is in my head. And I think whenever you grow up with a particular person playing that character, whether it's a James Bond or a Superman or whatever it happens to be, you tend to hold that as your own. The Superman character that I played when I was in the suit was 100% taken from Christopher Reeve. I borrowed liberally because that was, in my mind, that's how Superman should be. So that I took very liberally from him. And my Clark character was more of George Reeve's version, to be honest. If you look back at the George Reeve version, and that's, you know, Clark wasn't a buffoon, so to speak. I understand what they did with the films, but I really enjoyed playing Clark the way we were able to play him. And I stole a lot from Christopher Reeve and Superman. I'll be honest.
Thank you.
Plagiarized.
Yeah, there were a number of Supermans, for those of you that have been around long enough, starting with the Kirk Allen age, going up George Reeves and yada yada.
Anybody here knew Kirk Allen, then you're really hanging in.
Definitely remember Kirk Allen.
And I'm 1948 series.
I'm 16, so yes. Yeah. All right. Young man in the Marvel shirt. Go ahead, buddy boy.
Is it hard being an actor?
That's a good question. I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to say no. Both. Sometimes it's very difficult. The life of an actor is a difficult life. And everybody always says, they ask me the question, is, do you want your son? I have a son who's about almost 13 now. And I said, do you want him to get into this business? And it's the same advice my father gave me. No. But it can be a great life, and it can be a very difficult life. Part of what's so great about it is you can play all these different characters, these different people, and you get to travel the world. I've been fortunate enough to travel the entire world, and I get to see all these wonderful things, and you're granted access to stuff that you would never see, and people you would never spend 6 weeks, for example, or 3 weeks in the Republic of Georgia, you know, on a normal basis. You wouldn't know all these people who live there and spend time with them. So in that sense, it's fantastic. But the hard part about acting is there's an awful lot of rejection and an awful lot of being judged. And if you don't have the right demeanor, it can really, really affect you. So you kind of can't take it personally when you don't get a role. You can't take it personally when someone says, oh, I saw that, I didn't think you were very good in that, or whatever happens to me. You say, okay, well, it's your opinion, and now you have to leave. You get that a lot. That's part of being an actor, is you have to have... You have to have thick skin. So it's sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's hard, buddy. But if you decide to do it, good luck to you.
Who's your favorite Superman, young man? Who's your favorite Superman? Him, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Let's go to the side of the room. Yes, sir, right here.
Amazing.
Well, when we were shooting the series, we shot 4 seasons, and we were picked up for a 5th season. So we were going into a 5th season, and during that time, Terry Hatcher was pregnant, and the hours that we shot on the show were high.
Ma'am, I'm his agent.
The hours that we worked on the show were dramatic. We worked really long hours. I would leave my house typically, you know, 18 hours later. I've bellyached about that quite a bit because it's all encompassing. It totally consumes your life. And Terry got pregnant in between the 4th and 5th season, and she literally wasn't able to work. So there was a lot of questions as to whether we would continue the series without her or not without her. And any storylines, because we worked really closely with DC, everyone was trying to work that out. I wish we had done a 5th season because we sort of left things hanging. And if that would have meant that Terry would have, you know, worked a little bit here or there, and less other times. I would have loved to have worked her pregnancy into the show. I don't know where they were really going to head. I mean, I wrote a few episodes, but my episodes were standalone episodes that didn't really advance sort of the through line. I did that on purpose because they wouldn't let me in on all the secrets. So I really don't know where we were headed. But I, obviously there was a child involved. And, I thought with her being pregnant, we could actually work that into the show. And then we would have spun off Smallville on our own.
Awesome. Let's go somewhere here in the middle. You have a man right here.
Yep, that's you.
Stand up for me.
Hello.
Hey.
When it was cold, how did it feel to be in the Superman?
When it was cold, it was cold. There was literally, the suit for us was just a lycra, just spandex, just tights. That's when the wool cape was wonderful, because you wrap up the cape. You know, I'd have a big old jacket there, too. And I tell you what, when it was real hot. And so, and you can't sweat in that suit, because if you do, it shows up. And Superman doesn't sweat, so there's a problem. And we'd be shooting in July, it's 110 degrees outside in Burbank, and they'd be like, don't sweat. I'm like, what do you do? So, yeah, when it was cold, it was very cold. I would feel it. But when it was, that's just the nature of the beast. You know, you got to grin and bear it. Pretend it's not.
Let's go over to the side of the room. Oh, we got to do a classic Superman t-shirt dude right here. Go ahead, man. Oh, you got a cape, too.
In the show, looking back, is there anything you got happened personally? And if so, another part of the question.
Did I want to get anybody to get anything?
Like,
as far as like insight or like, did I steal like the costume or anything? Well, you know, the show. One of the things that I love about the show, and I think you and I talked about this earlier, was. You know, again, I have a son, and we don't. There's no appointment television for us. It's nothing we sit and watch together. But so many people who come up to me tell me that they grew up watching with their mom and their dad and their brothers. They watch as a family, and there's something so amazing to me about that. Having my own son and knowing what that bond is like, and you know, having a show that teaches. It's a very family-friendly show, and I think it holds up to the test of time. Now, because it started airing on the Hub, and my son would never watch on the DVDs, but it was on the Hub, and then he watched like 3 straight episodes. He goes, Dad, that's pretty good. I was like, I've been telling you for like the whole it was great. So it was very, very nice to hear him actually realize, you know, why people were like, hey, your dad's Superman. He just sort of thought I was, I guess. But so I love that we had that sort of a family friendly show, and then people could watch it together. That's, to me, that's one of the greatest things. For the legacy of the show is that so many people grew up watching that with their families. A lot of times now people say, you know, I lost my mother, you know, 4 years ago, but I've watched the show now and it makes me think of my mother and my father, you know, they have those memories together, and I think it's pretty amazing.
What I like, I think, your series was basically the first, I think, actual dramatic presentation of Superman, or let's say modern day Superman. Not only that, you're right, it was definitely a family-friendly show, but it actually did focus a lot on the relationship between you and a character, obviously Lois, and not only just your deed. So it was like, wow, I love Dynasty, I love Falcon's Crest, I love Knot's Landing, and I love The Adventures of Lois and Clark. What better evening can I have right now?
We had a little bit of moonlighting thing going on.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
That, I like how you played off each other, too, you know? Lois, yeah, okay. Go ahead, since you've already been close to him already.
Thank you very much. Where did I hide my clothes when I changed from Clark Kent to Superman?
Yeah,
you might have stopped me on that one.
You understand. See, when there wasn't any phone booth available, usually just like Wonder Woman, you could spin. And because he's at super speed, you know, he folds them up real tight and he puts them in his pocket. And by the time he goes around.
The cape hit the booty. So we clothes are back there.
Captain America!
That would not.
You see that shield raised up? Yeah, I kind of have it all on.
First, I
just
want to say that your Lois and Clark are my favorite out of all the movies, the TV shows. But personally, you talked about getting used to rejection as an actor. Is there any big role that you didn't take? At any time in your career, and later you were like, man, that
would have
been pretty good.
You know, not really. There's nothing that... What happens when you're doing a series, though, you're just not available. You're not allowed to take roles. You just can't do it. And it's like when Pierce Brosnan was doing Remington Steele, he couldn't go play James Bond. And you're just locked in the contract. So there was a period of time where there's some things that would have been pretty fun to do that I just wasn't able to do. But there was never a time...
There's a lot of times where I got real close to getting some roles that I wanted to get but didn't get them. That's a little bit disappointing. But, you know, there's never a time where I had to turn it down because I didn't make those horrible mistakes. You hear those stories, you know, who turned down Indiana Jones and who turned down Grease or whatever it happens to be. And, they missed the boat on a couple of those things. But I don't have any of those. I'd be much more inclined to try to make it work out and do the work. I love working, and I'll do, you know, I sort of come from the Michael Caine school of acting, which is, he does so many different roles, he'll take so many different roles and work so much, and then someone will ask him, you know, after he does an Academy Award winning performance, why he goes and does Austin Powers or does something else like that, and he's like, I'm an actor. My job is to go act. So I do that as well. You know, I'll take small roles, I'll take roles in my friends' films, I'll take the roles in the $60 million movies as well. Those are harder to deal with because there's scheduling issues, and I'm a single father, and I don't like to be away from my son for very long. So that's the toughest part of, you know, that balance between being a parent and being an actor. Because as great as it is to travel to New Zealand or wherever, you know, unless you can take your family with you, it's tough.
I implore that you visit his IMDb page if you notice that he's been actually working every single year since Lois and Clark ended. I mean, literally, if you look at his IMDb, it's every year, 2012, 2013, 2000, whatever, you know. He's a busy man. I commend you for that.
Thank you. You're about six or seven a year.
It's a lot.
Yeah. But you're not tired yet.
Yeah, this is not
even his arm up all the way down again.
Can't believe it.
Well, I think, you know, you have a storyteller like Christopher Nolan, you're going to get a quality feature. And there's no two ways about it. I really look forward to the next film. I think Henry Cavill is going to be fantastic. I met him at the premiere of Immortals, actually. And I'm 6 feet tall. He's probably 6'4". But I didn't think he was that big. I'm like, dang. Big guy. And just a really humble guy. He seemed very humble. He's a very humble guy, and just, he has the right sensibility. I don't know how dark they're going to try to make it. I don't know how, you know, I've seen one little preview. It looks pretty cool. Hard to say. It's weird putting the suit without the underwear, I gotta be honest. Am I the only one? But the guy's built. I mean, he's in great shape. I don't know, but stick some bodies on him. So that'll be interesting. I don't know if it's going to be tremendously dark. I'm not privy to the script. I just think it's going to be fantastic. I think the last film that came out, Brandon Routh is a friend of mine. He's a great guy, a very talented actor. I just think that film missed the mark, so to speak. Maybe it was two films in one. It was a little confusing. And I know Superman worked pretty well. I was like, what? Where are we really going with? So this one, I think, is going to be a nice reset button for Superman. And I really look forward to it. And I'm not in it. They never asked me. Part of rejection, I guess.
Now, part two. There will be part two, I'm sure. This young lady right here.
Thank you. You know, it's fine. I appreciate that very much. Being a parent is my favorite thing in the world. It's the most demanding thing. And there's obviously a lot of parents out here, and there's a lot of little ones out here. It's the greatest thing in the world. Hardest work, and it's cliche to say it, but it is. But I mean, just before I came up here, I was sending a test to see if you slept well. For me, it's effortless. There's effort involved, but I just really want to know. And one of my good friends is like, you have to have more kids because if anything happens to him, you're going to fall out. Like, he sprained his thumb and I'm a wreck. It's like, it's okay, he sprained his thumb. I'm like, no, I have to fix the thing. I think I have to spread it around a little bit because I dote on it pretty well. But I love being a father and being a single father. And so when I'm not there, you know, it's hard for me because he lives with me full time, and I like to be there. That's the biggest thing. And I learned that from my own father, who was always there. And he's a director and had to leave sometimes, but I never felt that I didn't have him. So I want my son to feel the same way.
You, like myself, I work Dragon Con in LA, and I've seen you. I think I just saw you up there, whatever. And how do you feel about the number of cosplayers who are in abundance in Superman outfits and costuming? How do you feel people, and a lot of them look like they're trying to play a lot off of your looks, and so how do you feel about a lot of the cosplayers who dress up as yourself?
I love it. I think it's fantastic. Part of the fun for me coming to these events is to see the costumes, and I dig it. There's a couple guys around that run around, I think even drag comic, that put me out of work, and I'm glad they weren't in costume at the time. it's very cool, and I think it's got a I wouldn't want to say a cult following, but I mean I love that about the embracing the geek nerd sort of thing, and that I'm a gamer too, and I all those other things. So for me, yes. I love doing all that stuff. So I love seeing the costumes and the bigger the better, as far as I'm concerned.
With Sci-Fi Channel being on property this weekend, they're obviously trying to create a miniseries on their network based on cosplaying. So I don't know if you guys seen them floating around, film crews or whatever. If you think about it, I think the first costumes that ever came on scene in terms of conventionings and whatever is a Superman costume or a Batman costume. Nothing other than that. So you basically set yourself a trend. Down in the middle here.
Batman's easier to hide, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know the glasses, people don't recognize me, but still plays well. The guy with the weapon in his hand.
We watched the first season recently, and we saw the evolution of the Superman costume. And the first one of the small S to the one giant S, and then it just kind of turned into the one that Trumpy wore. Which one was your favorite, including the black one from the season where you go back to the
time? I thought the black one was kind of cool. Yeah. It's kind of fun. I think the costume we ended up with was my favorite. It takes a long time to figure that out. I didn't realize that, and I was really a pawn in the game, if you will. There were a lot of heads, a lot of cooks in the kitchen trying to figure out what was the best looking costume. I was telling somebody earlier today, when we first put it on, it's just a little Lycra jumpsuit. And I was terrified. There was no S on it. There was no nothing. And I was like, this is what we're going with. Okay. And then we had to start working on the cape. And it was a really long process. And then you have to blow some wind and see if the cape's correctly. And that's the whole thing. And it's funny, you don't think about it when you watch a show, but it's a real big factor in how things are going to work. But I think my favorite costume was the one we had at the end. I think that we finally got it right, and it worked the best. It was the most functional. I could be in and out of it quickly. That first cape was a nightmare. Nightmare. With the little epaulets and the whole thing. That became a problem. They always talk about changing the suit, but not changing the suit. And there are diehard fans who would hate the fact that the suit would change or wouldn't change. I guess maybe I'm in that boat right now because Henry Cavill's version isn't as completely different. So
sucks.
He said she didn't like it. So we'll see. But that was my favorite suit.
How many people were... Put your hands down for a minute. Who was not alive when Lois and Clark debuted on television? Raise your hand. Be honest. Who was not around when Lois and Clark... Look at that. You still have some people who obviously pick you up on DVD. Love it. All right. Just checking the room. All right. Way back in the room. This gentleman with the hat. The other one.
I mean, you made so many episodes of Lois and Clark, and you worked with so many great guest stars. Who was your favorite guest star to work with, and why?
That's a good question. Favorite guest star ever. It was really amazing for me as I wrote my thesis in college. It was on the Motion Picture Academy and sort of the history. I was a history major, so a history of the Motion Picture Academy, why it came about, etc. So I'm a bit of a Hollywood buff, not tremendously, but a little bit. I really appreciate some of the older sort of legendary actors that came on the show. We had Tony Curtis. That was incredible. But I think my favorite guest star, and it was because of my father's reaction, had to be Raquel Welch. What happened is during that, there's one scene, she kisses me. And I call my dad, I go, "Hey, Dad, I just kissed Raquel Welch." And I think he hung up on me. The only thing that could have topped that for him was if it was Anne Margaret. That was about it. He always had a thing for Anne. But having those legendary people on was fantastic. We had so many great people. I think she has to take the cake.
Wow, fantastic. Anyone, this gentleman right here. Yes, sir, stand up.
Yeah, by the way, I did meet Kirk Allen, and you are a better student.
Thank you very much.
And you've done a lot of other things, and one of the ones that I thought you looked like you had a lot of fun on was Las Vegas.
Oh, Las Vegas, yes.
The character was fun, and the Raquel Welch comment reminded me of you. You were surrounded by someone. So how did you enjoy that show?
I loved shooting Las Vegas. That was a lot of fun. And I would have stayed on the show, but Gary Scott Thompson, the creator, who also did, you know, Fast and Furious and things like that, he had a new show pilot called the Protected Surf, or it was called Protected Surf. So I broke off with him and made that show. It ended up not getting picked up. It was about police officers in Los Angeles. I thought it had a real good shot, so I made that move to get on that show. It didn't work out, which is unfortunate, and then at that point in time, I couldn't go back to Las Vegas, so they had me killed by a giant squid. As only you can do in Hollywood and or Las Vegas. But I loved doing it. Coming to work every day was great. The guest stars were amazing. John Elway, John Bon Jovi, and the Pussycat Dolls. That's one episode. I was like, this is great. And I'm the owner? This is fantastic.
Fantastic. Let's go to this side right here. In the back of the room, young lady with the pink mask on.
That's the Ultra Woman costume.
Ultra Woman.
That's what, that's the costume that Terry Hatcher had when she had superpowers from one episode.
Okay, going back to the whole evolution of the costume, like he was asking, I'm curious how entertained you were by the fact that you tried on several other superhero costumes during that beginning scene.
Yeah, that was a very funny homage to, you know, Flash and all the other things. That was a lot of fun. I'll be honest, at that point in time, it was such a whirlwind, the stuff we were doing, the things we were going through. I was just, that was the first time I ever had the full suit on for Superman, too. So, funny bit. That's a nod to Deborah Jo Levine, our creator, and... It gave us the right sentiment, the right feeling going forward. And I like the Superman suit better than the other costumes, for sure.
Cool. You're already standing. Go ahead, sir.
First of all, I want to take the opportunity to thank you for being here, because when I was a kid, the first time my parents allowed me to watch television, it was Lois and Clark. And it's because of that I'm actually following a career as a journalist. And I want to thank you for that. Second thing is, there was an episode where you obviously claimed Superman, you accepted the heat of the city in Metropolis, and you got overwhelmed for the fact of all these fans of Superman. I was wondering, when you were in that time, did you ever feel overwhelmed like that? Was that a thing that all of a sudden Superman recognized that Superman was there for how long?
That's a great question. Somebody better answer that. That's a great question. First of all, the fact that you watched that as a kid and were able to see that's what I was talking about earlier. I just think that's amazing. I think it's fantastic. We were up on Sunday. We're on Sunday night, so a lot of people, that's the only time they could stay up late before they went to bed for a school night. So a lot of people they like us just because they got to stay up late, and I'm fine with that. Secondly, you know, the great question about the fame thing is because when it happens, and I'm doing a show right now where we have a lot of young people on the show, 20, 21, and they haven't dealt with that spotlight situation, it's really difficult. And I have been an athlete, so I've been used to being in the spotlight and seen as a role model. I was a college football player and I played in the NFL, and I got to see it firsthand. And a lot of the kids that I grew up with, I saw them become sort of role model. But these are kids like Sean Penn, Chris Penn, Charlie Sheen, who had some foibles, if you will. And I got to watch them make their mistakes. For me, there was a time, first season, when we were when I was asleep in my bed, and I literally was like, no more pictures. And so it does affect you. I was like, what? Then I wake up, I'm like, where am I? And you get confused, it gets overwhelming. And so it can be really tough, especially on the younger people. That's why you see so many of them crack under the pressure. And today, with today's social media and all that stuff out there, the response is like instantaneous. So it can really crush somebody who doesn't have the right base, whether that's a family or and or friends. Hopefully it's a family, to keep them grounded, because you can get completely lost in that, and it's a whirlwind. When you first do it, it's a whirlwind. I'm watching these guys go through it now, and we're doing a show we're doing isn't the network show. It's VH1, but it's overwhelming for some of them, and I gotta, you know, this one younger one, I'm like, slow down. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And you're gonna get some positive feedback, you get some negative feedback. Don't believe any of it. Just go on and do your job. So it gets very difficult. But yeah, now I'm the old guy, so it's fine.
Dan, my apologies for the noise behind us. I think that's the anime. That's the whole no wonder.
Oh, I thought they were cheering.
Voice actor panel. Well, this is reality, okay? Let's go for this gentleman over here in a green shirt.
I like this guy looking down to see if he had a green shirt on. He was like,
oh, yeah. Stand up, sir, so he knows. There you go.
He's saying that Superman seems to work on TV and Batman works on the big screen. Shame on you. Listen, the Superman films were tremendous. The Christopher Reeve version did very, very well. And obviously they started trailing off at the end. The first couple were better. Batman's had a great resurgence. Being a dark character, it's great. There's probably about six guys playing Batman now, five or six guys in the film franchise. And it's become something completely different from the first couple of ones that had that humorous bent to them to what it is now. Superman just hasn't had that incarnation yet. Maybe this is it. Maybe this version will be it. Hard to say, because there's only been one film done since the Christopher Reeve version. And obviously it was less than epic, but this one may be, you know. So I think the fact that he's the most moral guy on the planet, he's not the darkest character. I think this one's going to be a little bit darker, but I just don't know. I think this will change the game. I hope it does.
Let's go this side of the room for me, please. Gentlemen, right here in the blue t-shirt. Yeah, go ahead.
Spoon. Despite your success as an actor, when you watch football on Sundays, you ever wonder, like, what if?
Yes. Well, you know what? I watch football on Sundays, and I go, ooh, glad I didn't take that hit. my mind is still, like, locked in there. I can see plays coming. I can see things happening. And there's that bit of you that goes, ooh, yeah, I want to jump around out there. For me, I had hoped to play 5 years in the NFL. I ended up getting 5 hours, but I got injured really early on, and I thought I was going to come back. In fact, I don't know, probably in the middle of shooting Lois and Clark before I finally realized, you're not going back to the NFL, buddy. It's not going to happen. I watch all my friends are general managers now, head coaches. It's shocking that I'm one of those guys. I'm that age. I'm like, what? Thurman Thomas was a rookie with me in Buffalo. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame like 5 years ago. I always thought the guys in the Yellow Jackets getting inducted in the Hall of Fame were really old. Well, I was like, it's just terrifying, isn't it? So I watched the game. I love the game. I love watching the game. I'm much happier with my career path. I was able to come back and be an honorary captain. And I was out there with the coin toss against the Miami Dolphins. It was me and Jim Kelly, I was rooting against the Dolphins, though, because I was playing for Buffalo. So it was Jim Kelly and me and Thurman Thomas and Bruce Smith. Out there was Marino and some other guys, and I'm in my cities and flipping the coin, and we go out. I was like, this is great. I was suited up. And then they started hitting, and I was like, ooh, ooh. And then, guys were getting smacked. Andre Reed, in fact, took a big hit right in front of me on the sideline. Comes off. We didn't get the first down. Yay for Miami. And then he stood next to me, and he was just kind of hurt from the hit, and he goes, hey, man, how do you get into that acting thing anyway?
Not that it matters at all. I'm from Baltimore. Okay, now, let's move on. Young man right here. Yeah, go ahead.
Play the villain. Well, whenever you guest star on a show, 99% of the time you're going to be the bad guy because the good guys are already established, so you got to come in and stir things up. So when you're a guest star, in our show, it's the same thing. You come in, you got to be the bad guy. And that's what it is. More often than not, that's the case, or else you're going to be being introduced as a main character, if you will. So I like playing the bad guys. It's fun. Thank you. Criminal Minds, thank you.
She said he was awesome on Criminal Minds.
That was tough. I was killing everybody in that show. Anybody can give me luck, right? Ooh, shame on me. That was a lot of fun. Girls love Criminal Minds. What does that say about you? It
says I'm happy I'm single. Okay, purple hair.
I would love to take some credit for that, but that was all in the writing. I would love to take the credit for that. But you know what? They saw what worked on screen and what worked with our chemistry and how things work, and they wrote for that. It was great. So it was a nice combination of the two, but I think they saw what things were working and they wrote to those strengths. She was a lot of fun to go get herself in trouble and always getting in trouble. It really worked well, so I think they did the right thing in the way they put that together. But yeah, I wish I had more influence on it, but it was all writers.
I think whenever DC gets their act together on their movie production schedule, whatever, you would be absolutely perfect in Justice League.
I think Justice League. I have now hired you as my agent, Mark, so we're able to work. Absolutely.
I'll work on it for you.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. I take it back. I won't be his agent. You can. Yes, ma'am. Lovely lady right here. Hi.
Thank you. I'd like to ask you, what is your latest guilty pleasure besides making my daughter's dreams come true?
Guilty pleasure as in...
Anything?
Well, I can't tell you that.
You could
tell you that, but no, I won't tell you that. I don't know. You know what I love to watch all the time? I watch ID Discovery, and stuff like that. I'm hooked on the first 48. I watch those things and I just get riveted. But I can't watch them around my son because I don't want to scare him. You know, I don't want him to. So he sees, he's like, Dad, turn that off. But we're watching, I don't know, something else. But I love to watch those kinds of shows. I get lost in them because I find that real life stuff, you know. They always say truth is stranger than fiction, and it really is. And so I can't peel myself away from those things. So that's definitely a big time guilty pleasure for me. I'm not demented, though, I swear.
Oh. Okay.
The scariest episode was when actually Terry had to eat those frogs. None of the episodes were particularly scary for me. Whenever you have to do something that takes you out of your comfort zone, I think, you know, you start to get a little... So maybe it was line dancing. That might have been the scariest thing. I don't recall, you know, some of the shows were much more difficult to do than others. But, you know, I look back at the whole... I don't remember any show being particularly tough or scary or anything like that. I think it was just, there was times where I would find myself so at home, like we were shooting the Daily Planet. I think that was my most fun, was to be in the Daily Planet playing Clark Kent was the most fun for me. I sort of felt like home and everything sort of hummed along very well. I really didn't, there wasn't a lot of fear in there. Maybe the scariest thing was when we shot a scene with a tiger. And if you ever worked with tigers, which, you know, how many of us can say, yeah, well, of course, you know, that's right. Is if you look at a tiger in the eye. It's a challenge. And they told me, don't look the tiger in the eye. Well, we're shooting this one thing, and the tiger wasn't kind of looking or whatever, and I kind of made a little sound like, and I ended up looking the tiger in the eye for a second. I couldn't help it. I just looked at it in the eye, and then his little, the whole side of his jaw went like, roar, went up, and I was like, sorry. And that was the most frightening moment probably in the whole show. That or careening 50 feet straight down toward an airbag on a descender. I didn't like that either. Outside of that, there's not much fear.
Dean, I got someone here who's going to be Googling you for years to come.
Hey,
all right. Hi,
right here.
It's Dean. What's your question for Dean?
I don't know.
Wow, that's my man. That's how I feel every day. I like your hat. Oh, you're good. You know you're good. I got you.
You dig it. You sure you don't have a question?
Well, let me tell you what it was like to fly.
What was it like to fly?
I'm glad you asked me that. The flying was fun. The flying wasn't very fun. We'd have to hang from wires, and it would blow a lot of air at us in front of a green screen. And I never liked that one. There was times to fly actually was fun, was when they would travel us. So you'd actually be standing there with the whole rig on, and then you have the timer, right? There's four guys grabbing a rope and running down the road. You'd actually move from point A to point B. That was cool. That was a lot of fun. But you can get really messed up. I think we flew into the trans lights a couple of times and things like that, which was fun. But the days when we had to just hang there and pretend we were flying, those sucked. I'll be honest. And everybody who came on the show wanted to fly. I want to fly. Then they got in the rig and you hang like a limp noodle, like this, boom. You have to straighten everything out. It's very difficult. And whenever Terry would be reduced to tears, like 8 times out of 10 that she was on the race, they were painful. So not many people really came on the show and flew well. They've gotten much better with their wire work since then.
That's called CGI.
Yeah, well, yes. Yes, it is. The freaking Spider-Man doesn't have to do anything.
All right, we absolutely have time for one more question. So who has the most unique question they think they can ask Dean? I'm going to grab this young lady over here. So you have a unique question? Do you really? Go ahead.
It's not really unique, but...
How to get into the film and television world. That's a great question, and it's very difficult to do so, I'll be honest up front. Nepotism is alive and well in Hollywood, and it always will be. As in any industry, knowing somebody is very important. It can be very helpful, but it is not... You don't need to know somebody in order to get into the industry. And the way that technology has changed so much nowadays, it's incredible. On my iPhone, my son shot a little thing, and there's a little app on the iPhone that allowed me to edit it in 5 minutes, and he can post it on YouTube. He's got some, 2,500 kids. I'm like, what's going on here? You can really, with the technology today, you can shoot things and tell stories. And someone was talking about this earlier. I forget who it was. And we were saying, you can just put together a story, whether it's on your iPhone or whatever, you can get people to see it. It can go viral nowadays. So that changes the world of filmmaking tremendously. I would suggest going to classes and things, but I'm a screenwriter. I've written 30 films, 30 projects, and I never took a screenwriting course. There's a certain natural ability. I grew up around it, so I was familiar with it. But I would tell people, if it's really your dream to be in this industry, and it's a great industry if you can make a living in it, it's a tough industry, but it's a great industry, is to just do, whether it means writing or acting or directing. You can really just do with today's technology. Make shorts, make small films, do take classes. But you know, the classes I took, I disagreed. I got a C in film in college. My instructor was an idiot. Because I disagreed with what he had to say. And we banged heads the whole time. He hated Hollywood. I loved Hollywood. And so we would bang heads all the time. So you're going to get, sometimes you're going to get a teacher you don't agree with. And like any other thing, you have to follow your heart and your gut and do what you think is best. A show like The Sopranos got turned down by every network. Every network said no. And then then HBO mixed it up. It's a huge hit. Happens constantly. So you really have to believe in what you're doing and believe in yourself. If you get rejected as an actor 100 times, you got to still keep going. And that's the best advice I can give. Don't listen to the word no.
Dean, can you please hold, if you can? Obviously, we just got a question that just came in from literally South America, and this is your number one fan here wants to relay it to you here.
Excellent.
Thank you. That was last night, talking with my grandchild, my daughter, cousin, in Ecuador, Guayaquil, South America, and he asked me that question about the clothes. You know?
About the clothes?
Yes. He's 5 years old. So, yes. So that's, I did that question for him. You know?
So that answer was for a 5-year-old boy?
Yes. So, I would say that you, Lois and Dana, that show is the most charismatic and wonderful couple. I love it. And, you know, for movies or shows, this is the most wonderful couple. I was over and over and never again. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Ladies and gentlemen, the most charismatic man in the universe right now, the fantabulous number one Superman in history, Mr. Dean Cast.
I really appreciate you coming out. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Remember, Dean will still be at his autograph table. I do believe he has a photo shoot coming up. What time is this photo shoot, Mike? 4:45 is the photo shoot. You still have some time to go talk to him down at his table and make sure he has things he'd like to show you, things like hopefully you will purchase. So meet Dean down at his table right now and don't stalk him as he walk out of the room down the hallway, okay?
I hope you enjoyed listening to the Dean Cain panel. I guess as far as all the panels I attended, this was probably one of the highlights of MegaCon this year. And if I have the chance to see Dean Cain at a similar public appearance again, I'll certainly do my best to take advantage of it. Now, I also wrote about the panel for the Superman homepage, and I'll have a link to that in the show notes. Next episode will be the Gail Simone Spotlight panel, and after that will be the Independent Comics panel, and I hope all of you are enjoying my coverage of the 2013 MegaCon.
Well, hello there. I'm J. David Weider. You may know me from the internet. Come in, enjoy my palatial Arctic estate. Ah, I see you notice the smell of mahogany and my hardback archive and showcase editions. Yeah, I do all right for myself. Listen, why don't you get cozy here with me on my Titano skin rug while Metallo mixes us up a drinky drink? Metallo, soda cola martini, shaken. Look, I want you to come with me to a place. A place where it's only you and me and the Man of Steel, maybe Jimmy Olsen and Lois Lane? Wait, where are you going? No, this isn't me coming on to you. This is a podcast promo. What I'm trying to propose is joining me weekly like Clark Kent did when he threw the green crystal into the water and saw Marlon Brando's giant head appear. Only in podcast form, and my head just won't even be visible because it is an audio medium. Once a week, delve into the world of Superman with me on Superman Forever Radio. Look at comics, toy lines, TV series, characters, creators, anything and everything connected to the Man of Steel. Every Sunday at supermanforever.com, iTunes, and other podcatchers. Superman Forever Radio, fighting for truth and justice forever. That's supermanforever.com. See, I didn't mean what you thought I meant. It's all good. And yes, this is a new glowing white Kryptonian robe, thank you so much for noticing. And yes, that is Lori Lamaris lounging by the pool. Don't tell her, but we're having smoked salmon for dinner and she takes it very personally. And you know who can't take a joke? Terra Man. You get one Glue Factory reference and he's up in arms. Superman Forever Radio. Keeping J. David Weider off the streets so you don't have to.
Even though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them.
Kids just don't fall out of the sky, Martha. Kara Krypton is gone.
What do you mean gone?
It exploded. You and I are the only survivors.
I am the Superboy, a genomorph, a clone made from the DNA of the Superman, created to replace him should he perish, to destroy him should he turn from the light.
You can be the world's greatest hero, or its most mild-mannered citizen. The only person who can write your story.
Superman Family Podcast, available on iTunes and at supermanfamily.com.
Hey everybody, my name is Andrew Pinkham, and you know, recently I've noticed a growing trend in Superman podcasts across the entire podcasting network. They're covering all aspects of his character, from his Golden Age stories all the way to what's being covered in Monarch Comics today. However, I've noticed there aren't any podcasts that look at the character of Supergirl, Superman's cousin, in any form or fashion that's not an audio drama. And I really think there should be a podcast dedicated to her and her character. So therefore, I created Krypton's Last Daughter, a Supergirl podcast. Krypton's Last Daughter is a monthly program looking at the character of Supergirl from three different eras for a character. From her first appearance in Action Comics, number 252, to her current reboot that's ongoing in the New 52 Supergirl title. Join me monthly at supergirlpodcast.wordpress.com.
This concludes another episode of the Superman Fan Podcast. The home website is thesupermanfanpodcast.blogspot.com. Episodes are also available on iTunes and most other podcast aggregators, as well as supermanfanpodcast.wordpress.com and the Internet Archive at archive.org. Your emails are always welcome at SupermanFanPodcast@gmail.com, and I look forward to reading them. The Superman Fan Podcast is a proud member of the following: the League of Comic Book Podcasters at comicbooknoise.com/league, the Comics Podcast Network at comicspodcasts.com, the Superman Web Ring of Websites, and the Superman Podcast Network, which you can find at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com, where you can find podcasts covering every era of the Man of Steel from the Golden Age to today. The theme music for this podcast is titled Plans in Motion, composed by Kevin MacLeod, part of the royalty-free music library at incompetech.com. You can join the Superman Fan Podcast group and page on Facebook, and follow the podcast on Twitter at Superman Podcast. Superman and all related characters and images are trademark and copyright of DC Comics. Any artwork displayed with the show notes is for entertainment purposes only. I make no claim of ownership to the images shown, nor do I earn any money or profit from this podcast. Finally, if you're interested in my comic book artwork, check out the webcomic Sleepstream, written by Jeffrey Taylor, co-host of the From Crisis to Crisis podcast and contributor to the Superman homepage website, at clockworkcomics.co.uk, where you can also find EOS, Education of a Superhero, written and drawn by Clockwork Comics editor Adam DeChannel, who is also a contributor to the Superman homepage website. At Clockwork Comics, you can find a variety of webcomics and ebooks, as well as print editions of our webcomics, t-shirt iron-ons, glossy prints, or posters. Go to clockworkcomics.co.uk. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Superman Fan Podcast. Join me next week as together we'll crash through the time barrier to fly into the past and explore the Silver Age adventures of Superman. And don't forget to wear your red indestructible cape. As always, thanks to Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, creators of Superman.